This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and today it's our follow-up show. Updates on the people and places that we've covered here in Southern California. Maybe you're curious. We certainly are about how they're doing, the folks you met in those stories that we've reported on our program. And with that, we begin with a follow-up on a feature from back in September. You might remember this one. It was a story about an 80-year-old widow named Gwendolyn Lang. She lived with two of her adult sons, and at the time, the bank had foreclosed on her home, and they were all about to be evicted from their house of 50 years.
I'm having a time right now trying to find a place to move because I have my twins with me. The boys are with me, and they take care of me.
But here's the twist. Lang wasn't losing her home because she stopped paying the mortgage. She's being evicted because of something that was supposed to make her life better, a program designed to help L.A. County become more environmentally friendly. And KCRW's Anna Scott is here to explain and to catch you up on exactly what happened to Gwendolyn Lang since you last heard from her. Hi, Anna.
Hello.
This is really a sad story. Mm-hmm. First of all, for people who didn't hear it or don't remember the details, what happened to Ms. Lang that she ended up facing eviction?
Right. So just like you said, she ended up in this situation because of a program that is actually supposed to help homeowners around the county make environmentally friendly home improvements. It's something called PACE, which stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. Mm-hmm. It allows homeowners to get no money down loans for things like solar panels, energy saving windows, and they pay the loans back in installments through their property taxes. Unfortunately, what happened to Ms. Lang is something that we've reported on before. It's happened to a number of elderly homeowners in Los Angeles. She ended up getting enrolled in this program by a door-to-door contractor who signed her up for multiple loans that she really didn't understand and definitely couldn't afford. So when she finally saw her property tax bill, she couldn't pay it, and it led to foreclosure.
And for the people who didn't hear the original story, Gwendolyn Lang got enrolled in this program through, I suspect, a pretty aggressive person, a contractor?
Yeah, a contractor who, I think it's fair to say, engaged in some predatory behaviors. His name is Frank Acoff, and he befriended Ms. Lang, ingratiated himself with her family, and then signed her up for these multiple loans.
My birthday's October 3rd. Frank's birthday was October 6th. And he always reminded me, you know, we're like family, and I'm going to treat you good. I'm going to do everything I need to do to help you.
And did Frank at any point tell you that there would be this increase in your property taxes, that if you couldn't pay it, that there was a danger of losing the house? Was any of that explained to you?
No, because he said he was going to help me pay my taxes. So he didn't tell me I was going to lose my house because I was under the assumption, and he made me believe that he was going to help me get the money for my taxes.
So this turned into a big mess. She had five loans in the end, and her property taxes went from about $1,000 a year to about $29,000 a year.
I mean, I remember that in the story. Mm-hmm. And when you told me those numbers the first time, I just could not believe that. So by the time we reported on it in September, Frank was gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the wind.
Yeah.
Gwendolyn Lang had already been foreclosed on by the bank. She was about to be evicted. What has happened since? Where are we right now?
So surprisingly, she is actually still in her home, and it looks like this may be a happy ending. Yeah, at the time that I reported this story, I got in touch with the private lenders that work with LA County to administer this program that she had been enrolled in. The details of it are complicated, but basically they said that they were not aware of her situation, and they ended up getting in touch with an attorney who is representing Ms. Lang to try to work out a deal that would allow her to stay in her home. All the fine print of that deal is still being worked out, so I can't really explain all of the details of it. But long story short, she's still in her house, and hopefully she's going to get to stay there.
All right, happy ending that she has not been evicted.
Yeah.
But the foreclosure is still intact.
Right. So she doesn't own the house anymore. That is true. So there is some kind of deal that's being worked out with the bank that does own it, because the foreclosure had already happened by the time we reported on this story. So that's true. But the good part is that it looks like she and her family at least will not be evicted from the house, and they will get to stay there.
But there still are homeowners in the same quandary, right? Like they still owe this money and don't know what to do.
Yes. There's actually a class action lawsuit over this very issue working its way through court right now. There are two nonprofit law firms, Public Counsel and Betsedic, who are suing LA County on behalf of numerous elderly homeowners who are in danger of losing their houses, just like Gwendolyn Lang was. And the case alleges that the way the county designed this whole program paved the way for predatory lending. Now, I should say the county says these cases are rare abuses of the program and that overall the program has saved a lot of energy and done a lot of good. And there is more oversight of it now than there was a few years ago. But the attorneys for Gwendolyn Lang and the class action plaintiffs say they continue to get calls from homeowners in similar situations every day. So we're going to continue following that case as it unfolds in court.
Well, thank you for this follow-up on Ms. Lang, especially. KCRW's Anna Scott. Anna, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, another story we want to check in on now is one that we did back in October. We brought you the story about this man.
My name is Jonathan Barber. I was convicted of second-degree murder for a fatal DUI collision. I served 16 years. I have been out since September 16th.
Now, we met Jonathan at one welcome home ceremony in South Los Angeles where newly released lifers, such as Jonathan, are welcomed back into the community. Reporter Lucy Kopp introduced us to him, and she just caught up with him last week and asked him how he's been able to transition back into the life of a free man, and she's with us right now. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, Steve.
So how is Jonathan doing?
Jonathan's doing really well. You know, when I touched base with him again for this story and asked him what was new, right away he mentioned getting his driver's license, which is a big deal, especially for someone who went to prison for a fatal DUI. So you can imagine he really wants and needs to drive safely.
Yeah.
I mean, also, if you imagine getting locked up with a life sentence, never thinking you'll get out, and then here you are driving a car in LA with no restraints and no supervision. I mean, it's a huge milestone.
So he got his driver's license back. What is he driving?
He's driving a 97 matte black Astro van that his dad bought when he was in high school. You know, there's nothing flashy about this car, and I think that's exactly how Jonathan would have it.
Well, see, I find driving an opportunity to relax, gather my thoughts, plan my day, decompress, listen to music.
Where does he drive this car? Does he go back and forth to work?
Yeah, so right now he's working as a drug counselor in Watts at a men's substance abuse residential treatment facility. So he'll drive the few miles to and from work. But he also likes to cruise around South Central, where he's living right now in a transitional house. This also happens to be the neighborhood where he grew up. When I met him, we took a drive, and he talked about how driving around the neighborhood actually helps him stay grounded.
I love driving around here because you can see the struggles. It reminds you that there's important work that needs to be done in the community. If I was in West LA, Westwood, Santa Monica, you don't see it.
I will say that for people on parole, especially for those who were sentenced to life in prison, there's a real fear of being pulled over because the stakes are high and because there's a distrust in those interactions with authority. But when I asked Jonathan about this fear, he kind of shrugged it off.
He's not worried about being pulled over. He's not worried about the authority that's out there.
Not really. I think because his crime involved a car, he's really approaching this as a privilege and taking it very seriously. And that was evident as we drove around his neighborhood. He talked about being confident in where he stands today if he's pulled over and has to interact with cops. You know, he has nothing to hide, and beyond that, there is a genuine change in his approach to life that happened before his release, and that makes him want to be intentional in his every choice. It's part of making amends.
Driving is just like pretty much any other behavior. The question is, what's the impact that my decision is going to have? And when weighing the pros and cons, is it better to abide by the rules, drive safe, or is it better to you know, speed and save a couple minutes? And for the most part, it's not worth it, the hassle. having to pay for a ticket or having to pay for someone else's car through insurance or having to deal with potential injuries and all that type of stuff, it's just not worth 5 or 10 minutes.
I think, Lucy, that gets to your point of what he said, living intentionally, right? Like, it's just not worth it. It sounds like he's doing okay.
Yeah, he's doing well. You know, he's applied for his master's in social work at UCLA, and he's waiting to hear back. And in the meantime, he's trying to build a social life for himself, which he says is harder than he expected because people are so busy out here. But if there's one thing he learned while serving time, it's the virtue of patience. And he's got a lot of it.
Well, after 16 years behind bars, right? You have to, you probably build up a lot of patience, don't you?
Yeah.
All right. Reporter Lucy Kopp, thanks for the update.
You're welcome, Steve.
Well, just ahead, the true story of 25 strangers living in a house in Highland Park. Well, you're going to find out what happens next on KCRW's Greater LA. Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis, and onward with our follow-up show and to a story that we aired back in July about a woman named Helen Harlan.
I'm an event bartender and server. I have been trying to be a writer and actor for 17 years.
Now, at the time, Harlan lived in a 5-bedroom house in Highland Park with 24 roommates. She said we should come out and visit. Yeah, we thought so too. And KCRW reporter Kaylee Wells did just that. Here's a bit of that story.
Susan Morgan, basically a server, waitress, caterer, musician, actor, writer, stereotype, basically everybody in LA. Hi.
My name is Ben Olson. I'm like a musician and then I do film stuff. So it's kind of the...
My name is Noah Lani. I just graduated college. I want to be a sex researcher.
I'm Justin, 21, going on 22 this year. I'm looking to find some full-time work before school starts.
Now, those are among Helen Harlan's roommates at the time, and KCRW's Kaylee Wells recently sat down with Helen to get an update on her living situation. Hi, Kaylee.
Hey, Steve.
25 people.
I know.
At the time lived in that house. How is Helen doing?
So you actually just heard her saying she wanted to be a writer and actor back when I chatted with her in June. She just got that big gig that she was looking for.
Oh,
I know.
Mazel tov, right?
Good news. Yeah. She was originally planning to be in that house for 6 months. It ended up taking 16 to get this break, but the break came. So she's living with a friend for the month, and then she doesn't have any housing plans after February.
So she's out of the house.
She is.
Wow.
I know.
No long-term plans. Was there anything then that made her decide to move now?
So apart from that big break she got, she was sharing a room with 3 other women, everyone sleeping in bunk beds, and you might not be surprised to hear, with 25 people in a house, there were some butting heads.
A little friction, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess there was a roommate that snored a lot, and Helen said something, and the roommate got mad, and so the roommate started disrupting sleep intentionally, giving her the silent treatment, wouldn't make any eye contact. So here's Helen explaining how that went down.
I confronted her, and she said, I don't want to change my energy for you.
Did you ever, like, complain to management and they just said no? Or was it just like...
Oh, yeah.
You did.
Yeah. Nothing happened. There was always... I mean, whenever I saw a conflict in the house, I shot an email or a text off and nothing changed. So I just stopped complaining and just was like... And then when this opportunity fulfilled itself, when this deal came through, it really was like, why would you possibly want to stay here?
So, yeah, it was already unpleasant, and then she got that chunk of cash and left.
It's like an episode of Survivor, right? Who's going to get voted off the island or out of the house?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. What about the rest of the roommates?
Yes, I asked her about some of those. So there's obviously too many to go through all of them.
Right.
But she said it's almost entirely a new group of people.
Really?
Yes.
So big turnaround.
Yes. There's only a couple out of the people that we met are still there.
Turnaround, I would guess that maybe... 30% of the people that you met or who were there when you came are still there. And the other 70% has probably turned around at this point 3 times. We had a English guy come in. We had an Irish guy come in. We've had a Haitian young man come in who's a student at PCC. lots of turnaround, but really the same house.
So the house is still the same as it was last summer. It's been 7 months. Did the landlord jack up the rent?
Right. He actually didn't. So the people in the house have changed a lot, but the house itself is almost the same. Rent is still $580 a month. Still 25 people that live there. That $580 still gets you the same bunk bed, all the utilities, everything included, paper towels, toilet paper.
Wasn't there a fight about the dirty dishes?
There was. And actually that fight got worse. Because,
it did.
Yes, because the two kitchens that they originally had just went down to one.
Oh.
So a city inspector came in. Helen doesn't understand why, but apparently one of those kitchens wasn't allowed. So that's been taken out. So now all 25 people are sharing one kitchen, and the dirty dishes issue has not gotten better.
All right. Helen is out of the house. The dishes still aren't washed. But now that she's out, you know the old saying, hindsight is 20/20. What does she say about this whole experience now?
Right. So when we originally chatted with her, she always talked about how 25 people sounds hard, but it works. And we had a much more positive look on it. She's saying now, she's not so sure that that was the case. So she said out of all the people that she saw there, maybe a third of them did thrive in the environment. A third of them were in there so quick it didn't really make a difference. You had an internship or it was just a stopgap. And another third, she said, just really didn't do so great there.
Those folks eventually had to leave before they were going to get evicted because they couldn't pay rent. And you do see that it's you're out back smoking weed and you're not at work. And you do see kids that folks in the house that every 3 weeks have a different job.
So she said that was more common among younger tenants. She said it was kind of like when you're a freshman and you go off to college and you get really caught up with the sex, drugs, rock and roll is what she said.
Yeah.
And life can unravel a little bit. So she said what she learned, the best thing was to keep your head down, keep to yourself, and only be in the house to sleep or whenever you have to. And those were the people that ended up succeeding the most.
I can remember much younger, obviously, when it was really hard. Rent was a lot cheaper then as well. But, you know, the power got cut off sometimes. You know, you couldn't pay for it.
Of course.
Right? And yeah. And that, I assume, is still a fact today. What did Helen have to say about keeping the friendships that she made in that house?
You know, she's not all that confident that she's going to be staying in touch with them, but she didn't seem all that sad about it either. Here's how she put it.
For me, it's kind of like working in a restaurant, is that you're all very tight for a decent amount of time, and then time sort of tells how tight you stay when you're not all seeing each other all the time.
Yeah.
Because they do the, you know, there were certain people in that house that I probably knew better than anybody else in my life for the last year and a half, and knew me better for the last year and a half. But now we're not in each other's sight line.
But you know what? I actually recently got a text from her.
Yeah.
It turns out she's been out for a couple weeks. Hasn't looked back since.
And she traded in 24 roommates for what? Two?
Two and a baby.
Two and a baby.
So moving on up.
Moving on up. KCRW's Kaylee Wells bringing us up to speed on the roommates living in Highland Park. Kaylee, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, coming up, you're going to meet the exotic plant guy who was about to be evicted from his brick-and-mortar store in West Hollywood. What happened to him and his plants on Greater LA? You're back with Greater LA on KCRW, our follow-up show. And you know, back in December, we brought you a story about a nursery, the Exotics Tropico Nursery, which is a plant store in West Hollywood. And the store's owner, a guy named Leon Massoth, was facing eviction. A developer had bought that property and wanted Leon out. Well, KCRW's Avishai Artsy is here with the latest on that story. Hello, Avishai.
Hey, Steve.
Remind us what this story was about, by the way.
Well, Leon Massoth, like you said, is, I called him the Indiana Jones of plants. He travels around the world collecting seeds from exotic locations in remote parts of the world, and then comes back to his store in West Hollywood, Exotics Tropico, plants them and sells them to customers. He opened that store over 30 years ago at the corner of Fairfax and Willoughby. And last year, he got some bad news. A developer had bought the property and had plans to build 6 condos and a restaurant in its place. And he told me what happened next.
And the end of September, suddenly we're told, oh, we have to get out by the end of the year. And with all these giant trees and all this vegetation, it's virtually impossible. And now with the crazy rents in Los Angeles, there's no place for us to go.
And did you reach out to West Hollywood City Council members?
Oh, right, I made a presentation. I went to City Council I went to the planning and development, and their basic response is they can do whatever they want. And I offered them, listen, give me a piece of land, I'll plant a botanical garden for the city. No, we're not interested. It's like the resistance was crazy, or is it like Star Trek? Resistance is futile. We are going to develop every square inch, and there's nothing you can do about it.
All right, so he was supposed to be out by the end of the year. What happened?
Well, he did get an extension until the end of January. And here's the good news. Leon managed to find a new place to move his store just in time.
He did. Where's that location?
Yeah, it's in Pico Robertson at 1528 South Robertson. So it's just about 15 minutes drive from his West Hollywood location. It's a former window glazing shop. And I stopped by at the beginning of February, and I found Leon there still moving in and setting up. And he'd been at the previous store just the night before trying to save the last trees.
Oh, yeah, we're chopping them out and just cutting them, chainsaw, whatever we can to get a big enough root system to extract it. We were there last night till midnight, just transferring stuff here back and forth, back and forth.
Back and forth between the old store and the new store. So is this new place like his old location?
It's a little different. I mean, from the street, it's a very modern-looking white building, very different from what he had before, which was kind of like the sprawling garden that came up onto a wrought iron fence. In this new location, there's a big storefront with floor-to-ceiling windows and a front showroom with white walls that kind of feels like an art gallery when you walk inside. And then there's a door that leads into a bigger showroom, and that's where he plans to grow rare houseplants using LED lights. And then on the back wall of that room is a big garage door that rolls up, and that leads into an enclosed back courtyard. So this is kind of the third room, and that's where his outdoor plants and trees will live. And he says it's actually a better arrangement than his previous location. More people are living in apartments, so they want more house plants as opposed to trees, which this place gives him room to grow. And the rent is about the same. And he saw an outpouring of support from social media and a crowdfunding campaign.
Everyone is concerned about the loss of forests, the loss of diversity, and it's very serious. It's like it's dawning, finally, oh, no more butterflies? What about the birds? Oh, they're all dying off. It's like, what about the oceans? Well, that's not so good either. It's like, this is really the only issue of our time, is stopping destruction of nature. And this is something, this is bringing nature into people's lives intimately when they're very separated from it.
I'm sure that there are a lot of people that are concerned about species extinction, but I have to think that one of the reasons that I think there was so much support for you also was sort of the David and Goliath story of you up against the big developer. Do you think that had a role in it too?
You know, it's finally people are unhappy about the rampant development and the loss of cultural institutions in the Los Angeles basin. Everything that people came here for is being destroyed. And in not a very artful way. I mean, this will be the age of the cube in the architecture books, and it's not going to be looked upon kindly.
So what happened was, after our story aired, KTLA did a follow-up story. There was a lot of traction on social media, and he saw this outpouring of support and a crowdfunding campaign.
So this seems like a happy ending for Leon, right?
It does seem that way. I mean, Leon gets to stay in business. He lost some trees that couldn't be uprooted, and, you know, it was very anxiety-inducing, this whole saga. But his fans showed their support, and they came out to help. And also, you know, he's in Pico Robertson, which is known as an Orthodox Jewish community. Other religious groups are there as well. And Leon was telling me this story about a conversation he had with a friend of his who's Sikh, and his friend pointed out that Leon is creating a temple to nature among all the other temples in Pico Robertson.
Right there in that neighborhood, that new neighborhood for Leon.
Mm-hmm.
All right, KCRW's Avishai Artsy. Avishai, thanks for the update.
You're welcome, Steve.
Well, that's going to do it for us today. Let us know what you think. Is there a story you'd like us to update or something you'd like to know more about? We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Share your thoughts with us. And while you're there, subscribe to the podcast. It's an easy thing to do. We'd love to talk to you each and every day. Next, on this radio station, we're back with Frances Anderton and her show DNA, Design and Architecture. Jenna Cagle, Rebecca Mooney, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Christine Comito, Amy Ta. and Christian Bordahl make up our team. And a hearty congratulations to Team Greater LA for winning 3 Golden Mike Awards over the weekend. It was over at the Universal Hilton. What a lovely ceremony at the Radio and Television News Association of Southern California. Reporters David Weinberg and Bob Carlson, I'm a proud host, Steve Chiotakis, thanking you for your ears and your time. Have yourself a great Tuesday.